Good evening. Well, welcome to the city, Monroe City Council meeting this evening, Tuesday, November 12th, 2013. At this time, I will call the meeting to order and ask if Liz, you take roll call, please.
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Gearing, Cutaback, Williams, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Hansberg.
Great. Thank you. Please join me for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, the first item this evening is one that I will actually turn over to Councilmember Camp to do a little bit more of an introduction. But it is, in addition to the presentation, it's also a request on my part to confirm an appointment of Karen Visaka to, or as, the student representative of the Rose Council. So with that, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you, Mayor. We had a chance, an opportunity to meet with Karen and discuss the opportunity of becoming a student representative for the 2013-14 school year. And so we do. The mayor and I would like to present it to the council tonight. She is very active. I managed to get a copy of the biography today, just before the session. Thank you. She's been involved in ASB leadership class, very involved in sports, including a thrower for she's very active in outdoor activities and enjoys, you are a ski instructor and you have been skiing since you were 2 years old. And your plans for the future are to be a firefighter. She hopes either to attend most colleges in Washington State, but everything including Eastern Kentucky University. I didn't even know there was one in Eastern Kentucky. And those are her goals. With that, I would like to make a motion to confirm the mayor's appointment of Karen Visaka as student representative to the Monroe City Council for the 2013-2014 school year.
Second.
All right. Thank you, Councilmember Camp. You have made the motion. Councilmember Hamford has seconded the motion. Karen, would you like to say a few words to council in way of introduction or anything? We had a very good conversation. I appreciate the time that you spent with Mr. any thoughts as you begin this trek, this journey ahead?
Is there anything you guys would like to know?
All right.
I'm glad you're interested.
Yes. Yeah. I forgot I was probably about how long you've been in the Sky Mountain.
What's that?
She qualifies.
That's a good question.
That's a question.
Longer than me.
Me too.
Well, as Councilmember Camp had shared Karen's desires to be a firefighter, we talked about that. Really excited. You have something in common with my older son, who also wishes to be a firefighter, and you've gone to what's the school? It's the one over in Everett, the vocational school over there.
Snow.
He took classes there. So, but anyways, with that said, I just want to say thank you for accepting. We look forward to your participation. Just one thing as we go forward, kind of something that Councilmember Camp and I had discussed, and that was that rather than wait till the end for council reports, that we allow our student rep to provide us with a report or any comments just after the
public comment
area. That way, being that it's full night, if the meeting runs late, I will give her an opportunity to speak early on and allow council to interact with that then, so you don't have to wait. That's kind of something we'll be bringing back. But for now, we're just glad to have you, and thank you. With that said then, Councilmember Hanford, comment?
Yes, I just wanted to let you know, I have Karen in my home. She's friends with my kids, and I definitely speak highly of her. And she's been involved with Monroe High School student body, ASB and all that. So definitely recommend her. So, great.
Carrie. Thank you very much. All right, we'll then go ahead and have a vote on the motion. With that, all those in favor of the appointment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, Karen, welcome aboard. And we look forward to having you part of our meetings on a regular basis. For myself, you'll have the opportunity to join us for, I think, 5 meetings remaining in this year. After that, I wish you well with the with the new administration and mayor, so you'll get an idea of seeing two different styles, I guess, of how the meetings are run and so forth. But in between now and January, December 31st, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to call me. So, again, welcome. Okay, with that, we do have a public hearing this evening where we... Jeff, did you want to do it after the public hearing or before?
We can do it after.
Okay, all right. We do have a public hearing this evening. This is a public hearing with regards to the 2014 preliminary budget. Diane?
This public hearing is to comply with state statute regarding the whole budget process, and this is a chance for the public to speak on any aspect of the 2014 preliminary budget, and for council to hear any input from the public. This is the first of 2 public hearings.
All right, with that, we'll open the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. I don't have anyone signed up to speak this evening, and I don't, I guess I'll ask the one individual who is here and is not a reporter or has something to say, Karen, if you'd like to share anything on the budget at this time, welcome to do so. All right, very good. You're the only one here, so I'm going to pick on you a little bit tonight.
I want you.
With that, then, we'll entertain a motion to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
So moved.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Seeing no lights, take a vote on that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, any discussion from council, questions to staff or to Diane? Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you. I just wanted to publicly thank Diane for detailing out the bullet points that we asked for a couple weeks ago. It is very helpful. When people ask, you know, hiring 5 ETs, it gives a little bit more definition on what those are, and that the two officers that are being hired are coming from the sales tax increase that was approved by voters. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments for Diane? For the record? No? All right, Councilmember Hanford.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
All right, motion been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Gearing to close the public hearing. I see no lines here, no comments. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we do have, aside for comments from citizens. This time is set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing.
Don't think on it.
No one has signed up, but have seen that there is nobody at this time interested in speaking to City Council. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Gearing.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Cuddeback to approve the consent agenda. With that, take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Very good. I think at this time, we're moving pretty quickly. But these next few items might take a bit of time. And with that, we do have an executive session requested this evening to discuss property negotiations. And so since we have Jane here, she's driven up quite a ways, I'd like to ask that we move the executive session to this point in our meeting to allow for Jane to get out of here. Would that be okay with you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, with that then, we do have an executive session this evening, and at this time I'll ask our city attorney to provide the RCWs and the purpose of those executive sessions.
Mayor, RCW 4230110 lists appropriate topics for executive sessions. They include, and this is reading from 1C, to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease, or when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of decreased price. However, a final action, if I got, would we see your D, Gene?
C.
Okay, then I'm just making sure I'm in the right place. Pardon me. Decreased price. However, final action selling or leasing public property shall be taken in a meeting open to the public.
All right. With that said, then, we have two items for discussion. One will take about 10 minutes, the other 20. So a 30-minute executive session in total at this point is expected. So for our new student council rep, executive session is a time that members of the audience will have to leave the forum to allow for discussion between council and council and attorney. And so with that, Karen, you're welcome to stay and return afterwards, but you're also welcome to go home and finish your work, whatever else you'd like to do. So choose to leave. Thanks again. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next meeting after your hours or minutes. So with that said, we will go into executive session for 30 minutes. All right, we're back in regular session. All right, first item here under new business is an ordinance adopting marijuana-related land use regulations. Paul's not here. I could have sworn I went by the sidewalk. I'll walk in.
You see what's going on?
I did just let him know.
Oh, you didn't kill Paul?
Yeah.
Now we can go to the next one. No, Ben's not here either. The next one going to be you?
What is the next one?
The Code of Ethics.
Yeah, that's me.
Why don't we just start with that?
Let's do it. But we need Scott for that.
Okay, let's see.
But he'll be here shortly.
We can do the lodging tax. All right, let's do the lodging tax.
Awesome.
Introduction, lodging tax request for 2014, Mr. Sachs.
Mr. Mayor, Council.
Now we can hear you.
There we go. What I'm bringing in tonight, it's an informational briefing, but it theoretically, we could take action on it if it wasn't for a code that said between the time we present the proposals to the Lodging Tax Committee and the time council acts, it has to be 45 days. What I wanted to do, the Lodging Tax has met. They selected, they made the recommendations. And I just wanted to put them in front of you, let you chew on them, and with the hope that we could bring this back in about around budget time, coincide with the budget, and put it on the consent agenda at that time for approval. The Lodging Tax Committee met. There were nine applications. Out of the nine applications, four were forwarded to council for approval or denial. State law changed this last session. The one big change was council is no longer eligible to modify the recommendations. They can deny, approve, or I guess those are the two options at this stage. So, and you don't need to, you can take them item by item. So you can approve one item or deny one item, but you can't modify those items. So, based on your preference, I can walk your way through it. All the presentations were attached to your packets, and be happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
If I might, just because I was part of, I was there during the discussion, I just wanted to point out that the High Road promotion application, I think it was very clear and by far the best example of a proposal based on the lodging tax goals and criteria. And so for any of those others that were not recommended for by the committee, it's safe to say that they did not meet or were close to what High Road Promotions had presented, and these others were much closer to the definition. Simply said, the definition or the kind of criteria is heads and beds, and High Road Promotions was, I think, the most clear in meeting that definition expectation. So. With that, Councilmember Gearing has a question.
I think Councilmember Campbell's first.
Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. I think these are great. I look forward to seeing this on the consent agendas. Ultimately, we're going to get down to each one of these things we've seen before. They have been successful, and the chamber, obviously, we've seen that being rebuilt and making some really great strides. So I like the what I see with the committee recommendations, and I look forward to seeing it back on the consent agenda.
Thank you. I just want clarification. So we cannot make any changes to the request. However, can we send it? If we have the possibility, can we send it back to the committee for adjustment if we feel something's too high, too low?
You could deny it.
We can deny it. We have no input to the committee at all.
Correct. What you could do, though, is direct staff to reconvene the lodging tax committee. There's no rule about
that. That was the clarification I wanted to know. Were there any options other than up, down, over? It sounds like there is. This
you could example. we could reconvene the lodging tax committee, and we would have to re-advertise to the entire community now that we're assessed.
And we go through the entire.
We go through the process.
You get 45 more days before you can bring it back.
Right.
So it does get complicated. Okay. The intent of the following the legislative process this is another piece of sausage that was created in state law. The hoteliers are very, very, very opinionated about how this money gets spent. Mm-hmm. And so it came down to this was the compromise that was reached. They want the ability, and we have two hoteliers on the lodging tax committee. These three events filled their hotels for the entire duration. Their request is that we get some events going on during the dark months that when their hotels are empty. These are all summer events, so that's the goal. The one thing that I think the committee was unanimous on is that we've finally gotten to the point where we're only funding activities that are generating overnight stays, with the exception of the chamber and the DMO activities, and we can expand on that a little bit. But one thing I did want to comment on is, in the past, we paid for the parks brochure, we paid for a dream brochure downtown, we paid for a chamber brochure. The $20,000 component given to the chamber is designed to start to pull all those pieces of paraphernalia together so we have a citywide cohesive plan for the paper part of advertising.
Okay. And with that, I'd like to echo the comments from Councilmember Gearing. Thank you.
Jeff, in the matching funds that the chamber listed, $30,000, do you know where those come from? Do you guys look into that and make sure like an organization matches the funds? Or?
I haven't asked for evidence of that, but where the matching funds come from are the sponsorships that they receive. For instance, Light Up Monroe. They've received $6,700 already in sponsorship for that activity. I know Fair Days Parade, with the sponsorships they received there, it was in excess of $10,000 for that. They received some money through the Beer Garden. At the concert this summer. So that's typically where it's not coming through their Chamber of Commerce.
I was wondering that. I was just curious.
Their board is very conscious of that, and I've been very adamant that we make sure that we try to keep that Chinese wall established.
And then another question. I saw that the triathlon, it looked like the economic impact was about $116,000 that it brought in. And it looked like it detailed out that was directly to Monroe area, and that came from the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau, those numbers. And then I saw the wakeboard one, and it said like $1 million something. Is that accurate? And is that to Monroe, or it didn't detail that it was just to Monroe? So I was just curious.
I believe in the way Tammy Dunn has described how they do that is they've gone through the machine and they say per visitor, the typical visitor in one day will spend X number of dollars.
Sure.
And so what they did was take the attendance and the participants in the event, multiply that times that number, and that's how they come up with that economic impact.
Okay, so the one for the wakeboard of $1.1 million or $1.2 million that they listed here, that's $1.2 million to Monroe areas.
It would be to the business impact zone, mostly Monroe. I'm sure Snohomish saw some of that. I know that when we have a big event like this, our hotels fill up and we spill over into as far as Linwood and fill their hotels.
Okay.
So it may be that other cities are breaking the reward of our event.
Okay, I was just curious if they could break it down, because it looked like they broke it down for the Lake Tai and said, and it said specifically $116,000 to Monroe, and then the wakeboard it was $1.2 million. I thought, wow, that's a lot of money. If it's just to Monroe, how wonderful.
Right.
We should support that as much as possible. So, but you think that's to the greater area?
I would, on the hotel side for sure, and I would imagine that some of the restaurant and gas dollars and that sort of thing spill outside of town.
Okay, thank you.
City Administrator Brown.
I'm just making an assumption, Jeff, but I would assume that was boat sales as well, because they do boat sales at that event.
Oh,
so I think that was
part
of our.
Okay.
Didn't they sell like three, went through three, there were $350,000 boats sold?
Oh, yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Thank you.
Which is sales tax here in town.
Yeah, okay, thank you, because that was. $1.2 million is quite a big economic impact for that, so that's wonderful. Thank you for clarifying that.
Something to say that, I will say is that council can considers regarding the Chamber of Commerce discussion. I think we had a presentation here a while back, and there's been. I don't know that I could say discussion. There has been comments made with regards to the chamber focusing their attention on becoming DMO, which is
Destination Marketing Organization.
Or Management Organization.
I think it's marketing.
Yeah. And the Chamber of Commerce serving as that Destination Marketing Organization. For the city as well. That's kind of the move to which the chamber is heading. However, I just want to point out that possibly council this year, next year, whatever it is, may want to come up with a policy that recognizes the chamber as the DMO for the city. Because at this point, the chamber is serving as the quasi-DMO. The council has never created a policy that says, yes, you are the marketing arm of the city of Monroe. And I think because that policy discussion has never been had by the city council, that's partly why you see a lower number than was what was originally requested by the Chamber of Commerce. And so I think just as for next year's discussion as the city moves forward, I think that it's important that council has that discussion and even allows for public input as to whether or not the city wants to designate the chamber as their DMO. And with that said, there are events that the city has paid for advertising. If the chamber is now the DMO or by policy, that may mean that the city is giving up that marketing authority to the chamber to market those events solely. But because that conversation has never been had, because council has never given direction to designate the chamber as their DMO, I think that's why you see the dollar amount is a little less. And but also, I just think that it's appropriate that, that council make a policy related to that. So because, again, there could be an event that the city wants to market themselves. They say, we want to pay for specific advertising to a specific market, to a specific, in a specific area. So, or no, we want the DMO to do that and then just give them free reins as to where they go and what they do. And that's, again, why I think I was so impressed with the High Road promotion, because their marketing plan was very specific. We are going to advertise on radio, we're going to advertise ad, we are going to advertise specifically in Spokane, in Portland, Yakima, or like that, Vancouver, for the sole purpose of bringing people from out of town to this summer showdown speed meet. So it was very specific in that. The Chamber of Commerce and even some of the others were a little bit broader, a little less clear as to how that those marketing efforts were going to be made. But again, with that, with the direction that the chamber is choosing to move in, I think it is important for council to have a formal discussion and allow for public input as to whether or not they want them to be the DMO or not. But I'll leave that up to council. So, all right, anything further, Jeff, on this?
That's it.
No? Any other questions for Jeff? Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Mr. Popelka, welcome back. I'm sorry, we moved a little quickly there. But it's time for you to talk about marijuana-related issues.
I'm still looking for free samples. It's legal.
This evening we have a discussion item. It's ordinance adopting marijuana-related land use regulations. First reading.
And we're here today to consider the first reading for adopting, changing our interim regulations to fully adopt them and implement them. As a reminder, the way it breaks out is that medical marijuana is prohibited. Production is allowed only in general industrial, which is pretty limiting since Lakeside is the only industrial parcel in the city. Processing is allowed in, let me put this map up.
Paul, could you? Thank you.
Not sure what that blue line is.
Well,
the effects of
too many samples.
Production would be allowed here, where that's where Lakeside is. I'll explain that circle in a minute. Processing is allowed. Oh, these colors are really off. Processing is allowed here on this parcel in the fairgrounds, part of the Frylands Industrial Park, and this piece down here, which is pretty much developed. So really, processing is limited to just those two areas. Retail is allowed basically in this North Kelsey area and where we have some service commercial here out at 522 and Main Street. And really basically nothing allowed within the major part of the city. However, something came up just today that there is a country kinder care / school in the building south of the theater, just north of Fred Meyer. This was apparently missed when we did this map, since the county assessor did not classify it where it came up as a flag, as a school. They do education work with, it's probably before and after school, but from preschoolers up to age 12. So that's going to trigger a buffer from that location, 1,000 feet. So effectively what it does, it takes out that western, almost the western half. This would be Walmart right here. Takes out this pretty much this entire area for retail sales. What it leaves is what's left to the east. The ordinance as we have it is not affected by this, since it simply lays out the zoning requirements. It doesn't specify where they are. It's up to the applicants basically to submit and ensure that it's eligible where it's being located. I'd be happy to take any other questions, and Scott's also here to take the questions that I don't care to answer, can't answer. But Mr. Mayor, back to you.
Okay. You have Councilmember Hanford, and then Councilmember Herring. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, I was just trying to find it. I believe Sultan made marijuana. They passed something here recently where it was made illegal, and they said they don't want it in the city limits at all. And that's my feeling on this. I know we've already, in order to stay compliant, we've kind of gone with the liquor board and waited to see what the regulations were going to be. But my feeling is strongly that we just don't want it in our city at all. And the way that I can sleep at night is because I took an oath to uphold the United States laws that if I say it's not allowed in the city limits at all, then I'm following my oath. So that's my feeling on this issue. I realize we're caught in a nasty spot between the state and the federal government. But until the federal government, you know, if they do change it, until they make changes, I don't feel that we as a city can ethically change things to match the state. So that's my thoughts, and I'd be more willing to make motions as needed, depending on what the assessment does. Thank you.
There are some other potential changes out there. Maybe Scott, could you touch on that?
Surely. And if I could start a little bit earlier, because since the last time we talked, there have been some things of importance that occurred. You mentioned the federal government, and about in late August, the U.S. Attorney issued what's now called the Cole Memorandum. A couple years ago, there was the Ogden Memorandum, you may remember, where the U.S. Department of Justice basically threatened Clark County and the commissioners dire things if they permitted marijuana in Clark County. The Cole Memorandum indicates that if local jurisdictions in policy and practice make an effort to strictly enforce the provisions of the state law, that feds are not going to pursue any action. They gave a list of impacts and things that they're going to look for that sort of become a blueprint for regulation among communities. The city of Seattle adopted a structure very similar to that that you're looking at about a month and a half ago. It's kind of interesting. A lot of the smaller cities have led, and now the larger cities are coming around. And part of the reason for this structure and why the city of Seattle followed it, with collective gardens and the whole medical marijuana industry, regardless of how you feel about the patients, it's clear there's no legal source for the marijuana that's sold in dispensaries currently. It's all illegal grow operations. There are no collective gardens out there with 10 people, you know, cultivating plants. There are a number of cities who, the city of Kent prohibited collective gardens. They're in the Court of Appeals now on that issue. There are cities, you mentioned Sultan, another is the city of Edgewood. Cities that are looking to ban are being advised by the insurance authorities, and I echo the advice that if you want to look at that, the better way to go would be to look at a business license process, not zoning. Zoning is an exercise of police power under state law. So zoning exercises that are in conflict with the state's general law are suspect. That's the reason that they're looking at business license prohibitions, because the business license prohibition is we only license businesses that are compliant with state and federal law. And that gives a clean presentation of the argument that this violates federal law preempts state law. The development that Paul's referring to is the Liquor Control Board has requested the State Attorney General, Mr. Ferguson, to issue an opinion on whether or not cities can regulate I-502 facilities. I'm participating in a conference call with city attorneys and the state, but the state, you know, the Liquor Control Board, after spending, what, about a year saying we're not getting involved in that, now they're asking the Attorney General to get involved in that. So that will be occurring over the next few months. Last thing, just as you consider, remember that your ordinance prohibits all collective gardens, but it permits nothing in your community that doesn't have a license. And that licensing process, it's unlikely that there are going to be licenses issued, particularly for retail establishments, until June of next year. So we've got a number of moving parts that are playing out. If the council wants to consider a ban, I mean, my suggestion would be to wait and see, one, is the Attorney General getting going to get involved? The answer is yes, but let's figure out how. The second part of that is that you've got, in effect, 6-7 months until those licensees come to you, and your newly discovered daycare is a new example. You're not issuing the license. You're not involved in any way other than not getting involved, I suppose. I appreciate your the ethical concerns, but again, what the ordinance tries to do is to say it's basically the same structure as the Cole Memorandum. If we can't control it and it's no clear licensing supply, we're prohibiting it. Or licensed, there's no clear license supply chain, we prohibit it. If the state issues a license, we'll respect it, but other than that, we're not involved.
Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. So, as far as the banning of it, attorneys are suggesting that we can you clarify that one more time? Instead of a zoning,
yes, sir,
it's a business license, at least.
Right. Well, the difficulty, if you exercise the zoning power to prohibit it, then the argument's going to be that I-502 represents the general law of the state, and that because I-502 envisioned a statewide system with counties and cities by population being assigned a certain number of licenses, that city zoning ordinances would conflict with general law, and you wouldn't have... It's a much tougher court system. The cleaner port sale is we only license businesses that comply with state and federal law. So if you if we're going to prohibit it, we're going to keep you out of town. We're going to keep you out of town on a business license basis.
Thank you.
And that gives you the clear, the ability, if you want to litigate it, to the, you know, depending on how far you want to go. So like, I think the problem that most cities are struggling with is this is going to be an issue of federal and national importance. And a lot of cities, the AWC and on your behalf, and communities are struggling with whether they want to be the one to litigate an issue that Eric Holder, the Attorney General, the State of Washington, the nobody really wants to see in the courts.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
So that would be what I would be happy to make a motion right now. Or we can wait, but the bottom line is, and I thank you for clarifying that, but in my thought, we've already extended things to try and see what's going to happen, and obviously nothing's going to happen right away, and I'm not willing to, we have a deadline come up December 21st, so rather than extend this again or try and do something like this, as I said previously, I'd rather that we just outright ban it in our city limits for those reasons. And I don't want to go to the federal, I don't want to be the test case, but I also want to sleep at night. So thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just one comment. Remember that the two would not be mutually exclusive. You could pass this and then look at the business license prohibition because they're exercising different powers by the city. This is the exercise of your zoning power. It's consistent with what you've been doing. Be happy to put together something for the council to review if you want to look at the business license prohibition.
Councilmember, I will yield for a question. I'd assume
it's less for. I was just about to give it to you, Councilmember Gary, but
I just want some clarification from the legal counsel. So you're saying that we could pass this, which would create the license, would create the zoning areas for future marijuana distribution or production or whatever, and then we could also ban it by refusing to have business licenses for it?
It's confusing, but it's exercise of different powers by the city. The zoning power is a power that comes to you through the state constitution and state statute. It has to be consistent with the general laws of the state.
Okay.
The business license, many communities have business license provisions. You know, again, somebody wants to have a nuclear plant or something. When you want to have a nuclear plant, you can have one if the AEC or whoever licenses atomic energy gives you the license to do so. So they're the exercise of two different authorities and powers.
So we would be risking a test case if we went with the refusing to zone it because we're not within the confines of state law.
Put it this way: if you're going to ban it, you're going to be running a risk.
All right.
I think that was a
clarification.
There you go. Now the better risk, and it's one that we probably would want to discuss in the executive session, would bring the business license back.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to cue that up again, under this structure that's being proposed, there would not be any licensed facilities in your community for about 4 to 6 months. I say the four would be if somebody wants to have a grow facility, because those are going to be the first licenses issued. If you choose not to issue business licenses, that's something, there's no vesting, that's not a zoning issue, there's no rights that people, just you would decide that we're not going to approve business licenses. There's an appeal process that's built in. It's a quick shot to court, but it's on one issue, and that's whether state law is preempted by federal law.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, Councilmember Hanford, for letting me do that.
Sure.
That's Attorney Snyder. You said consistent with zoning laws of the state, even if those zoning laws of the state are in conflict with federal laws?
Yes, sir, because the this is where this... Sorry, that's why I'm a lawyer. That's why I'm here. The zoning powers are local powers exercised under the state constitution and flow from the state. So the state, the exercise of those powers, you basically can zone consistent with state law as long as, again, just that, you're consistent with the general law of the state. The argument you run into trying to ban by zoning is that the general law of the state now includes I-502, where the citizens of the state have decided that marijuana is a legal use and the state's going to license them. So you'd be prohibiting something the state has expressly permitted. Prohibiting it because the facility, while licensed by the state, is in violation of federal law, comes under a separate statutory structure and it doesn't have that limitation. Again, it just allows the issue, which is, again, one that the state and federal government have tried very hard to avoid, whether federal law preempts a whole 502 scheme. Somebody's going to get to litigate that a long way.
Councilmember Gearing, one comment. City Attorney did mention 4 to 6 months. I am aware of a business. Somebody has approached me about a retail facility within that zone, and they're prepared to move now. So.
And Mayor, I might explain how that works, because the state, as part of the application process, has asked applicants to go out and contact communities in which they wish to locate. Those applications are now being received by the state, and I can't remember what the license fee is. It's pretty hefty. I think it's $5,000 or $10,000. The state is not doing due diligence. They're not checking to see whether somebody actually has a lease or owns property. They're going to end up with a lottery. And when the lottery is done, then they're going to re-notify cities where there are successful applicants. Cities can protest a location if it's within a zone that's prohibited. But that whole process, a number of potential licensees, people who want licenses, are contacting communities and then trying to pursue leases or purchase a property, but they don't have to even have that. They don't even have to have a letter of intent to apply.
Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. I'm in absolute support of Councilmember Hanford's points. I'd like to put on the business license path if at all possible. I don't know that it's actually necessary that we do this. If the Attorney General is going to weigh in a few months, then it seems to me like it might make sense to extend our interim ordinance at that time, have another public hearing as might would be required until we actually hear back from him on that subject. Especially if there's people waiting in the wings, as we've heard, we don't have to have this in our town. I agree with Councilmember Hamm, but I don't think we have to have this in our town. Secondly, if there's no guarantee that the federal government won't start enforcing this in the future, right now there's an administration that isn't going to enforce it. It may be enforced in the future, which I think brings potential issues there for us as well. While we have the ability to ban based on what seems to be very clear, if it violates, if it's not consistent with both state and federal law, we have the opportunity. I think that's a great opportunity to keep, you know, not judging those. It keeps us family friendly. I prefer to pursue the business license option myself. Again, there are other options, whether or not we actually need to do this. If we could extend, I'd love to look at extending specifically, like I said, if we're waiting for an Attorney General to weigh in on it anyway, then I don't know why we would need to take, we probably shouldn't take action tonight then, with regard to that, if we're still waiting on a statewide opinion, which will give us better information to make a final decision on. But for the time being, we don't want people filing for things. We want to have a consistent policy in place. I prefer to go to business. Right, if we need an executive session for other stuff like that, then let's certainly put that on. But if we don't absolutely need to do this tonight, or there's another way, extending the interim ordinance until such time as we can get more information, then I'd be in favor of that.
Councilmember Cutter.
Can you someone walk me through the process? There's only a certain amount that are allowed in Snohomish County, is that correct? A certain amount of licenses? I think I read somewhere in the paper that there would be one in Monroe, is that?
That's correct.
Is that accurate? Okay. So
in the first round.
In the first round. So they have to ask for a license from the state liquor board, correct?
Application with the state board.
Right? With the state board.
It's subject to a lottery as to who will eventually inherit that one potential license.
Okay. And you think that's going to take 4 to 6 months?
After the lottery, then they're going to be vetting the applications. They'll provide notice to the cities with objections and object to licenses that don't comply with the distancing requirements.
And the distancing requirements are set by the state?
Correct. And they're in I-502.
Okay. One question I had, if we don't set any zoning requirements and don't zone for it, and they get a license from the state board, and we don't have any requirements, can they go anywhere within our community that's, you know, as long as they meet the state requirements of the buffer being away?
I mean, if you ignore it entirely, let's take them category by category. The category I would be most concerned about, and many communities allow agricultural enterprises and gardens as a residential use. I don't think you'd want to ignore that side of it. Paul, and I'll defer to you, if you have a new use, that something comes in and you zone by analogy, that you would look, somebody's got a drive-through bank facility and you'd look to see if other drive-through facilities. Even if use isn't specifically covered, if it's a commercial use, you'd look by analogy to your code and determine where to put it.
Right, we would look at potential other existing uses, but primarily as to whether this use that is not specifically listed in the code book, because obviously you can't list every potential use,
sure,
whether it meets the spirit and intent of the code, and is a reasonably similar use to the other uses allowed.
A liquor store would be
liquor store
pretty
would be
close.
Something pretty similar.
Again, this is the zoning couple comes. The one enacting this ordinance would not prevent you from taking the next step and looking at a business license ban. But you do need to do something. The one thing you wouldn't want is for your current interim ordinance to expire without a permanent ordinance or another interim ordinance come along, because then people could theoretically vest. And the groups that you'd be most worried about at this point would be collective gardens.
And do we have the option of having another interim ordinance after this one expires on the 21st?
Well, the longer you extend an interim ordinance or a moratorium, the more vulnerable they are. They're intended to be emergency measures. And again, as I mentioned earlier, there's a case called, I'm sure Paul's familiar with, Biggers versus Bainbridge Island, which was about the use of moratoriums. And the Supreme Court said at the end of the opinion that cities can't use moratoriums to prohibit or for a purpose that's in conflict with the state's general law.
Sure.
And that was something where the city of Bainbridge Island was trying to put a moratorium on shoreline uses that the state had approved. You can see the analogy. Prohibiting something that the state has licensed.
So you also stated that the Attorney General was probably going to issue an opinion on kind of the business license route in the next couple months?
They're going to issue an opinion generally on whether cities can prohibit
through a business license?
By zoning or business license. Okay. And it's unclear, as I said, I'm participating in a conference call with Mr. Ferguson and some city attorneys tomorrow, kind of put the local side forward. Kind of hard to read, but my anticipation is that the state's going to support the Attorney General will support the State Liquor Control Board and the legislature at this point. There's also some discussion underway with AWC of a local option of giving cities, as in Colorado, the right to choose whether or not they're going to allow the uses. That, frankly, would be the best thing for all concerned. Sure. Save a lot of wasted legal. Well, I don't know. No legal fees are wasted.
I'm sure you agree.
It would certainly save a lot of court time.
Well, I'm definitely in favor of bringing back or looking at the business license option. Definitely in favor of going that route. I'm not in favor of us being the test case.
Well, maybe, again, I want to be clear. It's not whether or not there's going to be a test case. It's just how you can best position yourself on that if you're the one that ends up in court.
You use the word vulnerability with regards to extending the interim ordinance. But wouldn't it be safe for the city to extend the interim ordinance until the Attorney General comes back with a ruling? I mean, wouldn't it be counterproductive for the city of Monroe to take action and then the Attorney General to come out with a ruling that is opposite of what the city might take? So is it the safer route to wait until the state has done all of its vetting, so to speak, of the issue?
I'm not sure where to start on this. The difficulty is that I don't know that I've been involved in an issue in the last 10 or 15 years that has changed almost weekly. And one of the problems is there are a number of cities, you're not one, that they're on their fourth cookie cutter moratorium, where they've had a moratorium in effect without findings. You've had findings, you've taken your steps. If you wanted to wait for a reasonably short period of time to see what the Attorney General had to say, I think it's a common sense approach, and quite frankly, I don't think that a person who opposed it could get to court before the Attorney General issues his opinion. So a short extension for that purpose alone, we're kind of grasping it. Sounds good. I mean, this is sort of a seesaw thing. The more times you extend, the more vulnerable you are. Extending for a rational purpose and with well-founded findings, you're going to be in a reasonable position. There are no certainties here.
I certainly think that's rational. I hope the City Council does as well. If there is a motion to accept as for first reading, I will say that if it does not pass with a 5-2 vote, I will veto the ordinance this evening. Councilmember?
Yes. I believe that to extend the interim regulations, it will require, correct me if I'm wrong, a public hearing prior to expiration. And I believe, I'm just doing some thinking here, we do have time to notice and hold a public hearing before we run out of time.
Councilor Kemp?
Thank you. I'll yield to you, Mr.
I thought we already had that public hearing during this last segment. I was just going to comment on what you just said about the public hearing. I thought as part of doing the public interim ordinance, you had to have a public hearing during that time, which we did during this segment. So if we were going to do another, if we were going to extend for a short period of time, we would need a public hearing during that. At least that was my understanding. So just based on what you heard, I just wanted to throw that out there.
We held a public hearing with the Planning Commission back in March or April about the not being permanent regulations. And I'm not sure that that would...
Yeah, we need to have another ordinance.
This would be a different ordinance.
Okay.
But I believe that the math is there that it can be done. That's the way you wish to proceed.
Councilor Camp.
Thank you. Back to my original question.
Thank you.
So, regarding retail, I think of retail, I'm thinking someone's actually selling the product that they're going to consume. Marijuana-infused products, are those also going to be based on these zoning areas?
That would be considered retail sale.
So essential oils, et cetera, we would not be able to open up a shop on East Main Street that would sell any of marijuana-infused products.
Right.
Okay. And that's, thank you.
There's one tiny place, maybe in the...
Where is that one tiny place you got on 522 and Main Street?
I mean, right in here.
Right.
So Main Street would be...
Oh, wait a minute. Let's go back. No, I'm sorry if I may take the floor back for a second. Where was that small area you were talking about?
On 522.
No, this
here?
One.
Oh,
no,
this is...
I just pointed to someplace in essentially downtown Monroe.
Oh.
You're right.
Where are we? Not right about any name here.
Well, what are the cross streets? I can't see it.
This would be... Let's see. Here's Main Street.
That'll be right next to a bunch of schools. So
and here's Lewis is what over in here somewhere.
Okay.
A little more to the right.
To the left.
All right, the other way.
So Lewis and Main, so essentially on the corner of Lewis and Main. Is that what you're saying?
No, there's this little spot on the map that's outside buffers, but it's in a it's not in a commercial zone.
Oh, okay.
So
they wouldn't be able to open a retail shop there.
So it couldn't happen.
Okay, and the other spot you said is on 522.
This service commercial is here and here. Here's Main Street coming through, and here's 522. So on the northeast or northwesterly and southwesterly corners.
So it's that a little coffee stop is
could qualify
and
for
the other front
retail sales.
Okay.
Councilmembers,
excuse me.
I think this includes general and service commercial, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Sorry. Just a point of clarification from the discussion. Sounds like for that Paul and I should have for your consideration at your next meeting. The current ordinance on second reading, plus as an alternative, an extension of the moratorium and interim zoning ordinance, citing the request for an attorney general's opinion and your desire to review business license regulations as findings.
Yes.
I mean, Paul needs to know whether to, because we can advertise that in the alternative, but I want to make sure that you don't end up with a gap.
I think we would probably have to send notice to the paper this week for publication next week, and we can always cancel the public hearing, but it would be important to notice it. It's about 3 weeks ahead of time, so we have the ability to simply cancel it out if it it's not necessary.
Yeah.
But we'll be covered if you choose to go that way.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I think what the attorney just said was what kind of the direction I was going. It sounds like we have time anyways because the current interim ordinance doesn't even expire until December 21st. So we have a few weeks to do something there anyways. I would not be interested in Monroe being leading with our chin to be the test case. So that wouldn't interest me at all. But at the same time, if we're going to defer any type of, or if we're going to go with any type of zoning regulation, I'd also like to see it tied to a date on the calendar where we actually talk about business license, so that those things don't get uncoupled. And so, but it sounds kind of like there's consensus for all of the suggestions that the attorney just said. So,
Councilmember Gable.
I would agree and like to see all the options. I guess the one thing that, I'm writing stuff down and I've heard a lot of people's opinions, on the matter, and I have my own personal opinions. I voted no on the I-502, but what I struggle with is that it is the law of wash of the land. If it wasn't a federal issue, it would be the law that we would have. We would need to go through and do our due diligence to figure out the zoning. So as a piece of it says, we need to do that. I understand the point, Councilmember Gearing, where you talk about, well, you know, you can get a new administration in place and we go a different way from a federal perspective. But, you know, this, you know, California passed medical marijuana in 1996. We've gone through a couple different administrations, both political parties, different members of the House. And then the other component, when we talked about, you know, the conflict between the federal and the state laws, I'd say about, what, 4/5 states have laws that conflict with the federal government, ranging from firearms, you know, marijuana, whatever the case may be. So I guess all I'm saying is, you know, bringing that up is that we do need to go down the path of looking at, and I think it's incumbent upon us, because, you know, hey, 4 months from now, or the next legislative session from the federal government could be make it legal, or say we're not going to pursue it. So then it's, okay, we need to put the zoning in place and figure this out. It's a lot of land. We have a vote from the people of Washington State, which the citizens of Monroe are a part of, that says, you know, 55% of the public said, we want this legal. So that's my two cents. I like the idea of looking at all the options.
I move to table this for now until I can prepare the documents.
Second.
Okay. Motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Camp to table this discussion until such time as staff can bring back both this ordinance and an ordinance, another interim ordinance. Interim ordinance? Okay. Just for clarification. Did I say who's made the motion and seconded? I'm sorry. All right. Any other any discussion with regards to the motion?
Okay.
Councilmember.
Do we need to put a date on? No, we do want this before it expires on the 21st. Do we need to include that in the motion? We're only tabling. I mean, tabling generally means tabling kind of cuts off discussion.
That's right.
And so. We're saying that we still need to do something before the 21st. I didn't hear that in the motion, so do we need to include that in the motion? We might only comment.
Could it be continued? Is it not?
Yeah, rather than table, maybe continue. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
verbiage might be important there, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Table for tonight, because it was what I meant.
You yield for what?
Councilor Williams.
Do we even need a motion if all we're doing is not taking action and directing staff to do something else?
We don't. This is a little bit more formal to say that we're tabling the discussion for this evening until staff is able to bring back both this motion for first reading as well as an interim ordinance. Staff's indicated that, or Paul has indicated that it would be 2 weeks before we can have a public hearing. Is that correct?
Actually, it would be about 3.5 weeks out.
Which would still leave time for both a first, second, and a
maybe more than 3 weeks out.
So next week's the 19th, cancel, this would be December 3rd.
I think so.
Yeah.
To amend your calendar, to be sure.
Amend your motion, a friendly amendment would be to table until December 3rd. Yes.
Yes.
All right. So friendly amendment to the motion is tabled till December 3rd, so that staff can bring back both the this ordinance for possible first reading as well as an interim ordinance.
And a public hearing. On December 3rd.
Ms. Mayor, can I say that back to you? You've had a first reading on a permanent or regular ordinance, so that would be your second reading the next time, right?
There's been no motion to accept as a first reading.
Oh, I see. Thank you. But the next step, the interim step, you could take action. That would be a one, have the public hearing and adopt the continuation of a moratorium or interim ordinance, or an interim ordinance.
On the third.
Will that be a first
or not? Yes. Maybe next week they
will take it. It's perception.
third would be the presentation of this ordinance for and possible accepting as first reading, an interim ordinance as a first reading and a public hearing.
All right, you also have December 10th and 17th as
that's right. Okay, any other discussion with regards to this motion? All right, we have a motion to table on the floor. At this time, we'll take a vote on that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. We'll see you back here on the third call. Introduction. This is Code of Ethics Amendments as requested or directed by the City Council. City Administrator Rosales.
Thank you very much, Mayor. The Council did review this on several occasions since its conception, and that was due to clarifications in the code, discrepancies, that type of thing, and it continued to come up. So the last time it was brought forward for discussion with the City Attorney, Council asked the city attorney to look at amending the ordinance, making new adjustments to reflect state law. And so the city attorney worked on that over the past couple of months and has made those adjustments. It's back before you this evening. Legal counsel is prepared to speak on this matter as well.
Right. Thank you, Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. I'm just looking through here, remembering the discussion. I appreciate the changes. It's as I expected, and as I remember how the conversation went, leaving intact the board, the procedures, the hearing examiner, all the stuff that has had so much time and effort put into it, and really has cleaned up, you know, the definitions, which was the stuff that caused all the trouble in the first place. And so, really appreciate this that we've left in place, you know, as we have requested all the stuff, the board, the procedures, you know, all the different things that that have a lot of time has gone into. So I don't know if there's any action needed with regard to this, but I, you know, if there is, we certainly want to have a public hearing and then the ability to have a first and second reading, just as we did with the last item. So we need to schedule that. We need an official motion for that. I can do that. Otherwise, that would certainly be my direction. So if we do that, then and I know other people might have comments on it, but get the ball rolling. I'll move that council direct staff to prepare first and second reading and schedule a public hearing before the end of the year on the changes to the ethics ordinance as we see here. Sorry, Luke. Thank you.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gary and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to direct staff to prepare an ordinance for first and second reading along with a public hearing before the end of the year. Looking at the schedule, that would be either December 3rd or December 10th, I think, to ensure plenty of time. While it's going to get a little busy on the 3rd, there's not much at this point.
They are already scheduled. You see it on the
19th? Yeah.
Yeah, the 19th is going to be a little earlier than the 9th. So.
Well,
if we're going to do a public hearing, I guess, yeah. We can do a public hearing at any time before the final, correct?
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Looks like it's already scheduled.
Well, then next week, you're just confirming that you're going to do it, I guess.
Okay. Well, we need to do it. I don't, unless the public hearing has already been.
It has.
Oh, it already has been scheduled.
I anticipated it would go that direction.
Oh,
so.
I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Well, in which case, it's already on the schedule. So I look forward to talking about it next week then. And I will go ahead and rescind my motion since it's unnecessary.
Any other comments from council? Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you. So I'm I was not council, and I wasn't really involved around when the time when the ethics ordinance came to being, and Monroe created its own. And then I know there was some type of initiative process to keep it the same way that it is. Is that correct? Anybody can.
There's a section in there that was by initiative that the council. That's the. If you go down a little bit farther.
So I know about the ethics part. Board and all that part, and I appreciate that being kept in. I know it seemed to me, if I remember, there was a part where it was important to the public to hold public officials a little bit more stringently than the state law. Is that correct? And has that been taken out? Has that been refined to reflect state law versus what was in it before?
Yes.
Your ordinance has basically, I think there's seven three parts. It has a part of the mirror state law.
Sure.
It has a provision that was adopted by initiative that can't be amended by the council, that can only be repealed by the public.
Sure.
So those two core substantive provisions remain.
Remain.
Along with the process you established to review them. What's been taken out are a number of provisions that were added over time that expanded the scope of the ordinance.
Okay.
So the changes would bring it back. It keeps the process you had intact for holding people accountable, but it narrows the grounds to those that were established either by initiative or by state law.
Okay. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions? No? All right, we'll see this back next week. Very good. All right.
I'm sorry, did we have
they rescinded. Both the maker and the senator rescinded the motion.
More caffeine for Councilmember Campbell.
Please.
Yeah. Stat.
All right, lastly here, other new business is the introduction to the 2013 Comprehensive Plan Land Use, Housing and Economic Development. Excellent. How are you? Good to see you again.
I'm back. Tonight I wanted to give you a brief intro to the 2013 text, comp plan text amendments. Before I get into that, I'd like to give you a quick update on or other comp plan projects. On the 2015 update, I have a date I'd like you to keep track of, and there'll be more information coming. But on December 5th, it's a Thursday, there will be a vision workshop at Park Place Middle School, Thursday evening.
December 5th.
December 5th, Thursday. There'll be more information coming, so you'll be reminded. That's to gather the folks together to revisit and redefine the community vision as one of the first steps in kicking off this update process. We're also looking to form an advisory committee of, I don't know, six, eight, maybe more people, kind of a cross-section that would meet maybe quarterly, that would be almost like a, I can call it a stakeholder committee or an advisory group that can help the staff and consultants measure the results from meetings or the tempo of the participation, what's going on there, what are people thinking. It might be almost like citizen ambassadors. And we're trying to put a small group like that together prior to the vision workshop. They're in place. On East Monroe, we did have a hearing with the hearing examiner last Thursday, on the appeal of the final EIS. Hearing lasted about 5 hours. It's in the hearing examiner's hands. I'm hoping that we'll get a decision, a ruling, maybe late this week. And I'm sure we'll have it sometime next week, if not late this week. And once that decision is rendered, there's a reconsideration period of 10 days where the either the city or the appellant can ask the hearing examiner to reconsider his decision. And that's a 10-day period to file that, and then the hearing examiner's decision is due a certain number of days past that. And once that decision is made, once the reconsideration is settled, then there is no more appeal. I think I maybe talked about this last time, until council takes final action on the comp plan amendment. At that point, the neighbors or whoever could choose to appeal the comp plan amendment coupled with the EIS to the state growth management hearings board. But the hearing examiner's process will be done with that clear before you take action on the first reading. Let's see. School impact fees. We're going to meet with you next week to reintroduce school impact fees as our third amendment. We talked about East Monroe a couple weeks ago, and text amendments tonight, and schools next week, and then first meeting in summer, we'll be talking about all of these three together in context with each other. So that leads us to the text amendments for tonight. This is about the natural. Currently, we have a natural environment, land use, housing, and economic development that we're revising. I do have copies of these I can throw up on the screen if we need to. But you may recall, it's been several months now, the Commission Council decided to wrap natural environment element, it's a lot of syllables, take it up and incorporate it into the land use element. And we've done that. And we've been spending a good deal of time updating these sections, really in preparation for the 2015 update, so that those consultants and the staff as well have a better beginning point to start working with that update from the most current information and most reliable information. Because the 2005 plan is, what, 8-9 years old at this point. A lot of information that was out of date. The commission's been reviewing this the last few months. We're in the final editing stage. I should tell you that there's still some work to be done. We haven't dotted all the I's yet. There won't be any significant change or substantial change to the text, but we're still working through these three elements to get those finished. So I thought I'd just give you a real brief run through what we've done, and then we can take some questions. And like I said, I can't project on the screen if we want to get to anything specific. So land use, we have taken the natural environment element and taken information on critical areas, habitat, natural hazard areas like soil, steep slopes, that sort of thing, floodplain, and incorporated that into the land use, which I think is a good place for that. And we've done things like, this turned out to be a lot more work than I ever thought it would be, but that's what happens when you take something and you think you're going to do a very light update, and it turns into more of a rewrite of sorts. But we've redefined and updated the planning areas. You know, the old plan talked about, Milwaukee Hill, the downtown area, Curry Road, so forth. We've brought those up to date, and then I've also added a map for those, and gone through and updated all the statistics, the numbers, things like population and housing, different kinds of land uses and units. Some interesting trends are popping up here and there, like the single-family residential land use was about one-third of the city back in, I guess, the 2005 plan. Now it's more like 43%. Went from 33 to 43. So what that tells you is that there's been a lot of development of single-family residential that has raised that percentage over the other categories of land use. We looked at, did some work with land capacity. Back in 2007, there was a buildable lands report from Snohomish County, and we now have a 2012 buildable land report that's based on information from early 2012. It's a little over a year old at this point, but much more current than 2007. And we've applied a lot of that in updating the numbers and the land capacity. And the bottom line is that at this point, in relation to the 2025 population projection, we're short of capacity. We were short in the past, and we're still short of land area to accommodate all the people that we think will be coming to Monroe. This comes down to about 900 people within the city and 900 people out in the UGA, outside of the city limits. And that translates to a little over 600 units. That's single family, multifamily, almost any kind of unit. And the old numbers, I think, were 2,500 people and about 1,000 units. We've had some growth, and the capacity takes into account some of the pending work or work that may be in the planning process a year ago. And our number of persons per household has gone up significantly. We have the highest ratio in the county of 2.96 people per household. It used to be about 2.6 or 2.7. And we're significantly above every other jurisdiction. So we have more people living in, more people living in each individual unit on average. So that, and I think that will continue, so that drives down the number of units actually required. We're still at, 600 plus dwelling units. Let's see. Employment. We updated some work on employment. The buildable land report tells us that we have excess capacity, maybe to accommodate another 1,000 employees, and that's I'll call it somewhat theoretical. I have a couple of maps I'd like to pick up. We talked about this before about vacant commercial and vacant industrial. Let me pop up a couple things here. This would be vacant commercial ground. What's going on with this strange
color? The
colors.
The tubes inside are off. The red, blue, or the yellow, blue, yellow, green.
But you can see on here, we have, I think it's about 58 acres of vacant commercial ground, which includes this is the landfill area and so forth. This is the northern part of Walmart. Most of it is in the North Kelsey area. Here's North Kelsey coming through Chain Lake. This would be
Chain Lake.
I was confused, Chain Lake and Old Owen. But most of that vacant ground is in this area. This would be the POD property, which is counted in this. No, I think it's about 6-7 acres. That's spoken for, nonetheless, it is vacant. But a lot of it is scattered all throughout in smaller parcels. The majority of it is in, let's see, in this area, maybe 2/3 of it. And we also have some vacant space up here. I think, as you asked that question last time about, I made some comment about lack of space on Highway 2, but actually, indeed, we do have some frontage here. I actually had an inquiry about this just recently. On this corner, this would be Frylands and Highway 2. And in the same way, we have a map of the industrial, which we'll relook in just a second.
Wow, that's a nice one. That's the commercial one.
Where'd it go?
To the left, right there.
Where'd it go?
Much smaller.
These colors are really off. I'm trying to remember how much industrial land we had. About 22 acres, a little over 22 acres. actually, when I pointed down to the 522 Main Street area, service commercial, we have about 11 plus acres of service commercial as opposed to about 58 acres of general commercial. But here's the industrial. We have just one parcel of general industrial, you know, the lakeside site. But here's Lake Tye. It's really all within the Frylands Industrial Park. But on paper, in terms of both vacant ground and vacant space, we have an excess of employment. Now, that remains to be seen as to whether that really bears this out. And all this is going to be revisited in the 2015 update, but we'll be starting from a much better place when we begin to do that.
Paul, is the yellow vacant?
Yellow is vacant ground.
Yeah, the one piece there, right dead in the middle, pretty much, yeah, right there. Isn't that the fire department?
Can you agree? I thought that was over here somewhere. Didn't that go away?
Is bottom right of that?
Yeah, at that intersection.
Okay, so it's the southeast corner of that intersection.
That's Canyon Creek.
Down.
The Canyon Creek's that big one.
Yeah, this is Canyon Creek right
now. No, above it is Canyon Creek. Yeah.
This one?
Okay, so down to the lower left, that intersection. I mean, lower right, I'm not, I'm sorry.
And to the right, the Canyon Creek. Sorry, that intersection.
So, okay, I just was wondering, I mean, I knew it was one of those properties, I'd forgotten which one. That larger one in the middle is not the fire department, it's the lower southeast corner of that
intersection. Oh, this one?
Yep.
Oh, I see. I thought it was out here.
That's on the other side of the street.
That's
okay. Right. Yeah, it's still vacant. Mm-hmm. You can flip the
light. I had only mentioned that because if it was that larger one, it does take away quite a bit of buildable industrial property that's designated for the fire department. Not so bad.
Who owns this property?
Real quickly, Councilmember Hamford. Did you have a question? Your light was on.
No, it must have been on from before. Down again.
Okay. All right.
That's a brief overview of the land use changes. We dropped quite a bit of material on you last week, and I was going to talk about housing and let Jeff talk a little bit about economic development. But can I take any questions or try and clarify anything on the land use information?
There may be a question. I just want to drop back to one question or statement that you made. You are putting together a committee. Is that committee something that I believe those committees in the past have been brought to council for appointment? And I think that would probably be the best strategy in this in moving forward is recommendations for committee members to be brought to council for appointment.
Absolutely. We have a few people in mind that were part of the interview process a couple weeks ago. We'll come up with some possibilities and see if they're interested. And it may even include one council member, perhaps one commissioner. But it's just primarily meant to be a apolitical, if you will, layman citizen type advisory board.
Councilor
here.
My bad. I was on and buildable land use report. So 2012, we heard about the 27 one when I first came on. That's all we talked about, the buildable land use report and density, and we were making decisions based on that. So has our density deficit increased or has it decreased based on the new? And do you know that off the top of your head based on the new buildable land use report?
It has decreased.
We have
made progress toward meeting the conditions that were set out in 2007, from 2,500 people down to about 1,800, and that's going to actually be reduced a little bit more as we move along because the projected population for 2025 is higher than the projected population now for 2035. It's about 1,000 lower mainly because of the last few years where there was basically no growth. When those projections were made back in 2004, you know, it was based on a continuing pretty strong, some assumed rate of growth. So there is some little bit of dichotomy here, differences between the 2025 and 2035. But short answer is, yeah, we definitely made a dent.
Okay.
And we're down to maybe, some say 600-700 units.
More density needs in wood. We're making progress. I appreciate it. Thank you.
We are.
Anything else before Jeff addresses or you move on to the next
housing
subsection?
Just a couple points on housing. Just to point out a few things, say since about over the last 12, 14 years, the single family detached units are basically the same in terms of the percentage of the types of units, single family detached, single family attached, modern family, mobile homes, and about two-thirds, right at two-thirds. That has not changed. That ratio has not changed. The multifamily is about 24%. So between the two, one-fourth of the city is multifamily and, what, two-thirds is single-family detached. No surprise that houses are getting older. 40-some percent of the houses in town were built during the 90s. That was the busiest period. I mean, I've been here, Brad was saying today, something like 450 permits in 1 year at one point. And it leveled off somewhat in the since 2000. There's some numbers in there regarding permits and so forth. And that really peaked in 2004, in terms of building permits. And then it started to slide after that. That serious downhill slide in terms of the number of permits and the number of houses. The other couple of other points is that the Hispanic Latino community about doubled in terms of its percentage, or about 18%, as opposed to 9% back in 2000. There's been no surprise, a lot of growth in that community, and we have continuing problems with affordable housing. There's lots of numbers in there about how many people we have in Monroe that are in these different income categories and the availability of affordable housing. It's a pretty limited availability, which leads to quite a few, they call cost-burdened households, where you spend more than 30% of, I think it's your gross income on housing, is housing and utilities. That's a real problem. So the plan we brought forth and try to add to some strategies for how that begins to be addressed, because I don't know if much has been done to change those percentages or those numbers in the last several years. And then both of these, we went through and updated, not the goals, but the policies. Some things have been completed, other things were just simply out of date and a little unclear. So we put quite a bit of polish on those as well. And there's a few inconsistencies between like housing and land use, particularly in terms of some of the numbers. And I think housing has more units that can be built than there's land available for. A couple things like that we'll get straightened out. We're probably 97% there to finish these up. Commission will have a public hearing on November 18th, next Monday, and they'll be making a recommendation to you on, we've rescheduled that meeting to December 2nd, and we're going to, you know, discuss these three amendments all together on December 3rd, so it's close, but good timing. Can I answer any questions about housing? More to come? Okay, Jeff, you want to say anything about economic development?
I just reinforce what Paul had to say is that initially this was an effort to get rid of extraneous language in the comp plan. It was written by an English major, I think.
I think it was written by an engineer who thought he could write it in English.
Right. what you'll find in the economic development element, you'll find that I spent the majority of my effort on the policies and the goals in streamlining the language in those and making it more specific and eliminating a lot of the conflict with some of the other elements in the comp plan. I tried to square up the tabular data in the economic development element with the Weiss demographic reports that we did last year, and there's just no way to square the two together. So what you'll see is a disclaimer in there that basically says we know that the demographic data and a lot of the employment characteristics, a lot of the sales tax revenue collection, some of the text data is still 2005, but we've attached the new reports so that the reports now are an appendix to the economic development element. Working with the comp plan consultant moving forward, the entire data set will be reformatted and recreated at that time. And it just didn't feel like my efforts, and I'll say my inexpert efforts to get those numbers correct at this point in alignment with the Weiss data, it would have been a horrible inefficient use of time, and I probably would have ended up with a set of data that was inaccurate. So I've just left it the way it is. Disclaimers in there, but in the end, the comp plan, the text is probably the least important element of it. In the end, the goals and the policies are what informs the regulatory environment, and that's where I brought a lot of folks in there. So happy to answer any questions you might have there.
If I could add something to that. Most of the data in these elements is based on 2011 ACS, American Community Survey, census data. And that will be updated again in 2014, so we'll have some fresher numbers on the 2015 update. And the Weiss data is also 2011, so most of what we have is on a 2011 basis as the latest information. At least we have some consistency there.
All right, any questions for Paul or for Jeff? Okay,
thank you,
Matt.
Thank you.
Well, at this time, we, in our agenda, we are come to councilmember reports. And Karen, as I said at the beginning, since you're back, thank you for coming back and staying with us this evening. We will provide you a time at the beginning of the meeting or the agenda to provide any feedback to council member or reports to council. Just understanding your schedule, you may not have the ability to be here every time until 9:30, 10 o'clock, and sometimes later. With that, you observed. I will start with you tonight if there's anything that you'd like to share, and if not, I'll move to the council members for their input. All right. Okay. Thank you. So with that, Councilor Gary, anything to report this evening?
Yeah, thanks. I just quickly just want to say I'm honored to be able to hang around for two more years. Thank you.
Councilor Cutterback?
No.
Councilor Williams? Councilor
Kim?
Councilor Davis?
Yes, I won't be here next meeting on the 19th. I will be away. I work, so.
All right. Councilor Gable?
And on December 3rd meeting, I will be in California on business. So I will
Yeah, I just wanted to thank everyone that won the last election, Councilmember Davis. Kind of Councilmember
Davis. What? I
missed it. And Councilmember Gang for running a clean election, or clean campaign, and just very and I also look forward to serving an additional 4 years. I'm excited to be with you people that I enjoy being with.
And you probably get to sit next to me. What could be better?
Yes, absolutely.
I'll be on the board
with a new zip code for you.
We'll be swapping seats.
I will give you money here.
I just made some closure for you to flay for it.
That's all.
You're good. All right. Jeff, anything else this evening?
Paul, anything else to see?
Just real quickly, we're still incredibly busy, and in fact, I forgot to mention earlier that the last several weeks, on a daily basis, we get inquiries, phone calls, emails about marijuana. Keep dispensing the same information over and over, so there's a lot of something. We're very busy. Trying to get a little bit caught up. Open the mess.
Thank you, Paul. Sorry. All right. City Administrator Bradley.
We were just mentioning Walmart did submit their second round of reviews. Everything looked good on the engineering side, and they got a green light. I know planning was still looking at some possibly by the end of the week they'll be issued a permit.
Oh, probably before that. Landscape plan were submitted today.
Okay. Close on that. On another matter, I just want to bring to Council's attention. We've been looking at medical insurance for the non-representative group. The current vendor, we're on the high deductible plan for the non-rep. They gave us the price quote for 2014. It was a 27% increase. And so we immediately started shopping around. We looked at the self-insured program that the fire department uses. That didn't really pan out. We looked at a couple other vendors. We spoke with AWC. AWC, we utilized them for eyes and dental. And their new program is you sign up for 3 years, and then they'll tell you what the rate is. And there's no guarantee that the rate's going to stay the same. And so that didn't seem like a very fiscal decision on that front. And so I went ahead and called the union. Teamsters Union and floated the idea behind or by them to pick up the 27 or 22 non-represented folks that we had and pled the case to them. They went to their board and came back and said because of the relationship that I've had with the union in the past and still good standing with them, they would accept the 22 people. The rate would save the city over $20,000 a year and the non-represented people would go under the same plan, Plan A, that the Teamsters represented folks are under, and all the non-reps would be paying a portion of their medical insurance, which is $35 a month. So anyway, that's the direction we're going to be heading. It doesn't take council actions, administrative decision, but we will be saving over $20,000. The good part is the Teamsters plan has over 16,000 members under that plan, so the rates are pretty stable. And obviously they want to keep their members happy. It's pretty rare that they would take a non-rep group even on. So at any rate, that's the direction we're heading. We're pretty excited that we'll have stable coverage, and we have had issues with a lot of the non-represented folks in regards to how the current high deductible plan went. A lot of people were out of pocket a lot of bucks, and it just didn't work out for many of the members that were under that group. So anyway, I wanted to give council a heads up that I think all in all it's a great decision, and we're going to save over 20 grand. So,
and it is an administrative decision, correct, based on council or input.
And then we have discussion about the council agenda and the schedule for that.
Okay, a couple things from my perspective. I forgot what the first one was. You mentioned it. What was the topic that Paul mentioned?
Walmart.
Yes. I don't know the exact numbers, but the feeling is, and I'll say that kind of anecdotally at this point, that since Walmart has begun its permitting application process, we've seen a lot. And I can't quantify what a lot is, but Mr. Sachs has shared with you a little bit about what that lot is, but a lot of interest has been piqued with regards to North Kelsey. A lot of movement out there. So for those here serving next year, be prepared, I would say, to see much more coming. So on the benefits side, thank you very much for looking on that, and I'm glad that the city non-rep employees are going to be able to benefit in that way. My premiums went from $200 a pay period to $686 a pay period as a result of some new medical things that have impacted our state. So that's what I have to report today. I'm not thrilled.
Mr. Mayor, could I ask sort of a confirming question? When we were discussing the alternative that the council wanted to the interim, making the interim ordinance on marijuana permanent, there are two ways to go, and I want to make sure that I bring you back something that's consistent with where you want to be. There was some talk of continuing the current interim ordinance rather than make it final. If you do, remember that that would permit a state-licensed facility. The alternative would be to bring you back as an alternative, a broader-based moratorium, kind of back up a step to where you were 9-10 months ago. From the discussion, my thought, as I thought about it, it seemed to me that there was some sentiment on the council for having a broader protection in place.
Question.
Well, my question, yeah. I suppose, is the mayor and council for the direction.
Just looking at heads, I saw four heads bob yes.
The continuation would be for 6 months, right?
Correct. That's all we can do.
It would only be for 6 months. So you're not going to be able to get a state business license in the next 6 months.
Well, if you continue it for 6 months, there's a possibility that some of the commercial and processing licenses could be issued in Vestment.
Which is what we were trying to avoid. We want to wait for the Attorney General. We want to hear what the Attorney General has to say.
As I thought about what I was hearing from you, it was to give you, before you make any final decision, to see what position the state had taken. I mean, it's likely that he's going to take a position consistent with your interim ordinance, but if he gives you an opening, do you want to look at it?
Yeah.
Does the interim ordinance, it can be repealed early, can it not?
Well, it can be repealed amended, yes, sir. And again, you may wish, this is sort of the Chinese menu thing. You may, after you discuss it, choose to approve a final ordinance, but place a moratorium on the issuance of business licenses until your ability to regulate is confirmed. You've got any number of combinations, but as I thought about it, rather than bring back just something that continued your current interim ordinance, it didn't seem to capture the flavor of the discussion I was hearing.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, could I ask just for a motion and for direction from the council? It's kind of hard for the clerk to get the head nods.
So the motion would be to confirm that the direction of council is to bring back a broader interim ordinance.
So moved.
Second.
Motion was made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hanford.
And I interpret broader to mean more of a moratorium approach pending the issuance of an AG's opinion.
Yes.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. Take a vote then. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
City Administrator Basil, our agendas.
Thank you, ma'am. First thing I would like to ask council about is in regards to the November 26th meeting that we have on our schedule and the December 24th meeting. Currently, we have those marked as canceled, but I would like to have council formally do that in a motion for one or both of those, should they see that they want those canceled.
Councilor Geary.
Thanks. Just looking at this, we have a lot of stuff in December. If there is a possibility for me, obviously we don't want to meet on Christmas Eve, but we can meet on a different night of the week. I guess, just because we have so many things we're talking about in December, I think maybe I would hesitate to officially cancel that last one yet, but maybe say if we're going to have it, maybe we'd have it Monday the 23rd, assuming people are still going to be in town. I know I'll be in town for Christmas. Obviously, Christmas Eve is not the night to meet. Perhaps the night before, if people are still in town on Monday instead of a Tuesday. But we still have a little bit of time between now and then, but at least I wanted to throw out that idea. If we've got stuff to talk about, let's leave our option open for that. I wouldn't want to cancel it quite yet, but certainly not having it on Christmas Eve. I mean, perhaps the night before, if people are going to be in town.
31st is also a Tuesday.
New Year's Eve. Yeah, so it's going to be a different night of the week. Keeping that option open if we need it, we may not. But I'm certainly fine with not doing the 26th if we don't need it. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
I'm not quite sure where I'm going to go. Councilor Gale.
I move to council the November 26th meeting and the December 24th meeting as scheduled currently.
Okay, the motion has been made. Let the motion die as for lack of a second.
Councilmember Camp.
And then Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I was just looking over all the content of November 19th, and we have a lot there. Is there anything we should know? I don't see a reason why we have to cancel November 26th. Just Thanksgiving is 2 days away, so if we can move some of the things over there, that would be my recommendation, especially if we're not going to cancel it. Again, I don't see a reason to cancel it, and if we can reduce the workload by moving, I would appreciate it. And I would like, I'm not sure exactly what we would need.
I don't know.
Additional time on December 3rd, 23rd, but I'd like to leave that option open that if we do need to have a meeting towards the end of the year.
Could you yield for a comment?
Please.
I'm imagining that those two things are being recommended by staff because a lot of people were on vacation those weeks. Is that correct?
That was a consideration, but remember this year we kind of had a format of canceling the 4th. Mm-hmm. However, when we start the new year, we will not be doing that. All of them will be open.
Right.
And that was part of the pay change discussion. So, at any rate, these are the last ones that were on the agenda to cancel. We can definitely staff the 26th, and there is a lot of items. We could shift them if that's council's pleasure.
Right. Just to finish my point, if we can move some of the things over to the 26th, I would be agreeable with that. I'm not sure about the 23rd, but as Councilmember Garrett suggested, it might be wise to have it a little bit open since we seem to be running into a lot of things towards the end of the year. Thank you.
Councilmember Hammond.
Yes, I would agree. I'd much rather meet on the 26th of November if needed. I'd rather not do anything closer to Christmas. I'd rather finish in 3 weeks.
It's just
nice. Plan to get it done. Myself, but
would you mind if we left it to staff as to which items we move to the 26th if it appears that we're going to have a meeting on the 26th?
Yes.
So we can, staff can balance that. Okay, just as a reminder, I'll be gone that week, the 26th, visiting family in California. What? Really?
Time is so limited now. We'll just this together.
Oh.
End of the year. So not be like.
No. I don't want to. I'm going to visit my mother in law. That's what I learned. Take a reference. All right.
Team draft agenda for November 19th, 2013. We have two public hearings, first being second public hearing on the 2014 budget, second being public hearing regarding Code of Ethics amendments, public testimony and ordinance amending Code of Ethics first reading, the consent agenda, unfinished business, we have the landfill report, new business, we have council direction regarding water rate study, review 2013 comprehensive plan, school mitigation fee amendments, and discussion regarding funding of the street maintenance program. Final action, ordinance adopting marijuana-related land use regulations, second and final reading. Obviously, that may change depending on what happens between now and then, and the draft agenda. agenda for November 26th, 2013.
Can we recommend moving all the new business items to the 26th? And the second reading of either the, well, the second reading of there has been moved because we're bringing back the first, so that the second reading of the marijuana related land use, that's actually going to be on the 10th. So if we take the three items from new business and move that to the 26th, that would give you really a landfill report and the consent agenda for the 19th.
Two public hearings.
And the two.
Yep, yes. Just at the top.
Yep.
That makes sense. Okay.
Do we need to review the school mitigation fee amendments to kind of stay on track?
Actually, I think it would be an excellent idea to move to the 26th. Give me a little more time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. There is no other need for executive session this evening. Councilmember Hanford.
Motion to adjourn.
Sorry. Motion to be made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp to adjourn the meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye, Council.